Good evening. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday night, September 8th, 2020. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead tonight, Labor Day is behind us, so we've moved into the unofficial beginning of autumn, and we'll examine two stalwarts of fall, schools and elections, to see how those institutions might be affected by autumn 2020. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek reports on how election safety is addressed here during a pandemic, and Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda explains how substitute teachers, always a need, but even more so this year, are handling this odd year. That's ahead. Arkansas is reporting 294 new cases of COVID-19 in the past 24-hour testing period. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 9 additional deaths. The new case numbers are derived from more than 5,100 test results. There has been a 10-person increase in people hospitalized from the virus. That brings the current total in the state to 409. 3 counties are reporting more than 20 new cases, including Washington County, with 29 new cases. At his COVID-19 press briefing today, Governor Asa Hutchinson said the relatively small amount of new cases follows a kind of pattern that's developed. Lower new case numbers coming on the heels of days of increased numbers, such as the higher numbers reported in the middle and end of last week.
For that reason, we're not necessarily anticipating that that is going to continue all week where we are. But it does show us a little bit of a pattern that when we have a high point, it doesn't mean it's going to stay a high point either. But what is encouraging to me, as I said, on some of those previous instances in which we had low numbers, we also had low testing. And in contrast to that, we have high testing in each of these days, and we've had some declining numbers.
The governor says the majority of new cases being reported are in people between the ages of 18 and 24. He says between August 30th and September 5th, the growth of positive test results in young people was notable.
If you look at the 18 through 24-year-old, that's over 16% growth rate, and that absorbs so much of the growth in cases that we've had compared to the other groups. If you add in the 0 to 17, that's the bulk of the new cases.
Since the beginning of the pandemic in Arkansas, there have been just more than 66,000 positive cases. 59,216 of those cases are considered recoveries. There have been 917 deaths in the state from the virus. Mike Preston, Arkansas Secretary of Commerce, says the first payments in the Lost Wages Assistance Program, approved by the president this summer, will be sent to eligible Arkansans soon. The $300 in federal money will come from FEMA funds and replace the now expired pandemic unemployment assistance checks of $600 a week. Preston says the system is now live in Arkansas.
Anyone who is receiving state or federal unemployment benefits of $100 or more per week, and the minimum on PUA is 132, so anyone on the PUA system would be eligible. Those who are unemployed due to disruption caused by COVID-19 pandemic is another qualifier for the $300. And as the executive order starts the week ending August 1st, and as the governor mentioned, this is on a week-by-week basis now, so we've been approved for the week of that August 1st, and we'll work with our counterparts of the federal government going forward. As funds become available and are released to the state, we'll be able to make those funds available as we're required to put up a 25% match, and we're using our traditional unemployment insurance payments to cover that 25% match.
Preston says the state has experienced 7 consecutive weeks of drops in the number of unemployment claims and experienced drops in 12 of the last 13 weeks. Arkansas's unemployment rate is now 7.1%. Today, the governor announced the state has become eligible for 4 additional high-speed broadband grants to improve Wi-Fi access in rural areas in White, Hempstead, and Jackson counties, and in the city of Humnoak. And the governor says an effort, first announced several weeks ago, between the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, the National Governors Association, and several states, including Arkansas, to purchase a large volume of antigen tests is moving forward.
We're using $4 million to purchase 120,000 antigen tests to be used throughout the state as a result of this multi-state purchasing agreement. That is our commitment. This will not require any state funds since this will be using CARES Act funding already approved for testing. And so the money is already there. It allows us to save a significant amount of money on the purchasing in a larger volume, but also hopefully to secure a steady supply.
The governor says the test will be used at Arkansas Department of Health local units, 10 college health centers, and selected community testing sites from October through the end of the year. Drive-up testing for COVID-19 will be held from 10 until 2 Thursday at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Northwest Regional Campus in Fayetteville. Testing will be in the parking lot at the corner of North Street and Woolsey Avenue. No out-of-pocket costs for testing will be incurred. The first 200 community members will be tested. The testing will be conducted by UAMS in cooperation with the Blue and You Foundation, the Bank of America Foundation, the Marshallese COVID-19 Task Force, the American Coalition of Marshallese, Marshallese Educational Initiative, and the Arkansas Consulate of the Republic of the Marshall Islands. Marshallese-speaking and Spanish-speaking community health navigators will be on site to help those who don't speak English. You do not have to be a UAMS patient to be seen. The testing is for everyone over 16 who feels they need testing. Northwest Arkansas Community College is announcing an unofficial count of just fewer than 7,600 college credit students enrolled in the fall semester. The 7,583 students represents a 12% decrease compared to the 2019 fall semester. In a press release today, Todd Kitchen, the Vice President of Student Services at NWAC, writes that the campus anticipated an enrollment that aligned with a schedule recently reformatted for COVID-19 safety precautions. He also writes that the school expects to have more students register for 8 and 12-week sessions that begin next week. And the Cherokee Nation hosted groundbreakings for 9 new and remodeled buildings in 9 different eastern Oklahoma cities today. The first was at 8 this morning for a new health center in Tahlequah. The last took place at 4, and that was for a PPE manufacturing site in Hobart. The construction, including the new buildings and the remodeling, part of the tribe's Respond, Recover, and Rebuild plan in response to the pandemic. The projects represented by the groundbreakings today, as well as 3 more groundbreakings to be conducted in the future, are part of a $25 million construction plan to increase health outreach, increase office space, and provide more food outreach. The money comes from CARES Act funding. This is Ozarks at Large. Election Day is now just 2 months away, which means local election commissions are hiring poll workers and establishing their pandemic protocols for in-person and absentee voting. As Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us, a couple of locals figured election officials could use a hand.
At the moment, Washington County Director of Elections Jennifer Price says her office is getting at least one poll worker application a day.
We feel like we're in decent shape going into September and October in regards to the number of poll workers that we'll have for the general election. But things always change. You know, regardless of COVID-19 and concerns with that, we always have issues with poll workers not being able to work on election day or getting close to the election and we lose a certain number of poll workers. So that's always been normal for us.
But she adds, the pandemic has expanded the pool of people who may pass on a poll worker position because they feel uncomfortable with the idea of being around other people. Price would like to have all applications in by the end of September, but she won't turn anyone away if they apply afterwards.
I'll never say we have enough poll workers because the minute I say that, then we're short on election day. And I would rather have more poll workers than we need than not have enough.
Price says despite the pandemic, they're still expecting a large turnout because it's a presidential election. But because of the pandemic, poll workers will have the added pressure of making sure everyone is following safety protocols.
I think a lot of times, you know, the voters don't realize these poll workers are working close to a 14-hour day, sometimes even a little bit longer. So we want to make sure we can take care of them as best as we can, and that's by having enough poll workers at the polling locations.
But the work days aren't nearly as long during the 2 weeks of early voting leading up to Election Day, since they're broken up into two shifts. As far as safety is concerned, Price says the Election Commission took note of what other places were doing.
You know, what was the grocery store doing? You know, how were fast food places handling it? What were restaurants doing? And how are they keeping, you know, the people who go to the grocery store, the people that work there, how are they keeping them safe?
And she adds the commission actually had a chance to test its pandemic precautions last month.
We had a special election in the city of Springdale on August the 11th, in which we were able to kind of set up our polling locations with all of these new COVID-19 procedures that we put in place, and it worked really well. We got compliments from both our poll workers and our voters who felt that it was safe at the polls on Election Day.
The safety protocols start with social distancing, which includes making sure voters stand 6 feet apart in line. Price says they're also limiting contact between poll workers and voters.
In part by giving the voter, when they come into the polls, they'll receive their ballot and they receive an I voted stylus that they'll be able to take with them. And that stylus they will use on the tablet to sign in. They'll use it on the express vote when they're marking their selection, and then they can take it with them so that we're not having to sanitize stylus between voters.
The stylus, Price says, is also a way of replacing the popular I voted sticker, because they're doing away with those for now, too.
And we know that that was going to be kind of, you know, disappointing to a lot of voters, because they look forward to having that sticker to show that they voted on Election Day.
They'll also have plexiglass shields placed at the check-in tables where voters show their IDs and confirm their voter information. And poll workers will no longer walk voters over to the express vote machines.
We've updated the instructions on the express vote to make sure that it's really clean and easy for them to understand. Of course, we're there to answer questions, but we want to maintain social distance between us and the voters as much as possible.
Price notes that voters and poll workers are not required to wear masks at polling locations, but she anticipates most will.
We will be providing all of our poll workers with a mask, a face shield, and gloves. They can use any combination of those that they want on Election Day. And we have sufficient supplies for every poll worker on Election Day to have access to all of that.
Funding from the Federal CARES Act has covered most of the additional equipment the commission has had to purchase to get ready for the election. But Price says they're teaming up with a group called Vote Safe Arkansas on a few other things, like swapping out polling locations that don't have enough space for social distancing for ones that do.
They're willing to help us try and find alternative locations, help us with finding poll workers. And then also they came to our office. They worked with both us and Benton County, came to our office and have filmed a little YouTube film. Basically, it's about a minute and a half long to kind of help spread the word about what to expect at the polls on Election Day.
Leo Orpin is the co-founder of Vote Safe Arkansas, along with his business partner, Trey Holt.
It really started when the primaries hit nationwide during the pandemic. We had we saw a lot of different states that when they were holding their primaries, they had they were running into some issues.
So Orpin says they reached out to the Washington and Benton County election directors to see if there was anything they could do to help make voting as safe as possible for as many people as possible.
They both told us that the poll workers were a huge, huge need, which makes all the sense in the world because one, there's a lot of people that were applying for poll workers that do not want to do it during a pandemic out of fear for their health and safety. And then the other part of that is that there are a big portion of the poll worker demographics that are of that high risk category when it comes to COVID-19.
Orpin says they're hoping to help with recruitment, along with collecting donations through GoFundMe to purchase additional personal protective equipment for both poll workers and voters.
We're trying to raise around $9,000. We're focusing on the mask to start, and anything that we have left over will then go to schools in each of the prospective counties.
They're also planning a social media campaign to inform voters about both absentee and in-person voting. It includes a video they released last week.
But one of the things that we learned from that was hand sanitizer, that it's going to be very, very important that if you are going to a polling location anywhere, do not use hand sanitizer before you vote. You cannot have the hand sanitizer, really any alcohol, touch your ballot, because the machine then will not take it.
The PSAs will also include information about the basics, like what kind of ID to bring and to make sure the address on your voter registration is current.
And a big thing that we want to do is to help be an advocate for the election commissions to get as much of that information out to make it to where voting is as safe as possible.
As far as voting absentee because of COVID-19 concerns, Election Director Jennifer Price says the county has already received double the absentee ballot requests they've gotten in any previous year.
And so we're anticipating between 10 and 15% absentee ballots will be cast. And overall, we're expecting between a 65 to 75% voter turnout. So that still means a large majority of people are going to be voting either early or on election day.
Price says they're prepared to handle both the absentee and in-person voting options, and voters will be able to do the latter at about 40 locations across the county. Price hopes to have that list of early and election day polling sites out to residents by mid-September.
The whole idea of making sure we have enough poll workers is so that any voter who wants to vote in person can vote in person. But also, any voter that has any concerns about voting in person can have access to an absentee ballot.
Poll worker applications can be found on the Washington County Election Commission page. The position is paid, but Price says volunteers are always welcome. All poll workers have to go through orientation and training before being assigned to a polling location. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
A couple of weeks ago here, we talked with Caleb Talley from Startup Junkie Foundation about how the annual startup crawl is, for this year, transforming to Startup Week. The deadline has passed for submitting 60-second entrepreneurship ideas, but there are still other events that begin Monday, including a pair of just-announced interviews that will be shown on Fayetteville Public Television next week. The interviews with Thomas Mack McClarty, former White House Chief of Staff and the chair of McClarty & Associates, and Sam Alley, co-founder and CEO of VCC, will be shown Tuesday and Thursday nights, respectively, next week. You can find out more about all the events connected to Startup Week at the Startup Junkie Facebook page. And there is another opportunity for small businesses and entrepreneurs in Arkansas to receive a bit of cash for a good idea. Communities Unlimited is opening Entrepreneurs Unlimited, a pitch contest to small businesses and startup-minded people in four southern states, including Arkansas, this fall. The winner of the pitch receives $3,000, the runner-up gets $2,000, and there is an audience pick choice receiving $1,000. The competition is an online exercise. The money will be awarded November 16th. More information about this contest can be found at communitiesu.org/pitch contest.
For more than 30 years, you've turned to KUAF and Ozarks at Large for important, insightful, and intelligent news about our community. This fall, KUAF is turning to you. We're raising money during the month of September to keep Ozarks at Large and all the important programs you rely on every day on the air. Listeners who give to this station provide more than 75% of our operating budget. You can be a part of our fall fundraising month and make a difference to your public radio station. Make a gift today at supportkuaf.com. And thank you.
According to data released by the Arkansas Department of Health yesterday, 568 faculty and staff members in public school districts in Arkansas have tested positive for COVID-19 since June 15th. That's 73 more since ADH's last report on Thursday. If teachers contract the virus, they may need a substitute to take over while they're recovering. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more on how the state's largest school district is preparing its substitute teachers to continue working in the age of COVID.
Bobby Cole has worked in education for nearly four decades and views the pandemic as just one more challenge.
Every year in education has its challenges and fun. So, you know, after doing this for now my 36th year, you know, I'm ready.
The biggest change for substitute teachers in the Springdale School District is they're being assigned to one building. Sub-coordinator Bobby Cole says in the past, substitute teachers could teach anywhere in the district, though they generally stuck to a handful of buildings.
Most of our subs have this family atmosphere to them, and they like to be a substitute in a building that they're familiar with. So realistically, even though they could take positions all over the district, they would pretty much narrow themselves down to one or two buildings. So what we've done this year with COVID, trying to protect them and the students and our faculty, we've just narrowed it down where we've given them one particular building.
Cole has also created online training as another way to protect substitute teachers.
They will be given a link to really just be able to watch me live and in recorded color and go through the substitute training. And they have links to the substitute handbook. And there's a link also to a substitute PowerPoint so that they can either read it, touch it, or hear me talk about it.
In the past, Springdale has had as many as 700 plus substitutes registered in its sub portal.
Right now, we have over 400 active substitutes. It may sound a little bit down, but what we did is I deactivated all the substitutes that have been in the system before. And when we sent out our poll to make sure that, hey, which building do you want to be in? When they answered us back, then we put them back into the system so that we would make sure that we knew exactly where they are. And some of them have answered back and have not worked yet. So we're now making calls and finding out, hey, you know, it's been a week and a half. See, you're not accepting calls or you haven't taken a job. So are you still interested in working here? And of course, some of them are a little bit scared. We want to see how this is going to go. So that's all right. We say, well, we're going to keep you active or we'll deactivate you until you're ready to go.
Cole says he thinks the district will be fine for now, but notes you never know what the future will bring.
It's amazing to me the durability of the people and the willingness of some people that are willing to go out there and take care of what needs to be done, especially for our kids. You know, we've got 23,000 students here in the district, and we're trying to take care of them as best as we can. And a lot of our educators, of course, you know, are at the age and have whatever underlying disability that brings them more dangerous to be around COVID. But they are willing to come out and take care of the students. The students become first.
One of those educators is substitute teacher Scott Bailey. He's been working in the Springdale School District for 13 years and says he loves working with kids. Bailey says he was given the option to opt out of this year, but didn't because he wasn't worried.
The school system here is unbelievable. I knew they would have it ready for us. And I got to tell you, they've even gone beyond what I thought they would do. So no, I wasn't worried at all. I just knew it would be different for sure.
Some of those differences include temperature checks, sanitizing desks, and wearing masks. Bailey also drives a school bus and says they've added extra runs to minimize the number of students riding the bus at one time.
So they're spaced out a lot better. The windows are all down, barring it's not raining, of course, but the windows are all down. There's no air conditioner that can be ran. If we're driving sports teams, we're taking extra buses for spacing issues, as well as the windows down, no air conditioner too. So all the teachers, coaches, everybody are masked up. I hardly see any faces. It's just basically everybody's masked all the time.
Bailey says it's been a smooth transition and everything's business as usual. He says having enough subs can be a problem, and it may be in the future, but he has faith they'll figure it out.
It is an issue sometimes. I've had to fill in for multiple teachers during the day. I mean, it's just crazy sometimes, but that's something we could deal with, and it's nothing new. I mean, we'll be all right.
Sub-coordinator Bobby Cole shares his optimism that they'll be able to handle the challenges of the school year.
I'm optimistic in the fact that we're going to be in school for the year. Even now, if we need some subs in different buildings, we're calling to try to make sure that they've got enough building or enough subs to cover each other in those buildings. And yeah, we've got as many as I said, 33 subs in one building. And we try to keep it somewhere around 8 or 9 subs in these smaller buildings, especially when they only have about 25 or 30 teachers in the whole building. And my biggest goal is to try to work as many people as they want to work and put them in the building that they want to be in.
Cole says he's trying to hire as many new subs as he can. Applicants must be at least 21 years old, have a high school diploma or GED, and pass a background check. More information about applying is available on the Springdale School District's website, sdale.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
According to the Department of Health, as of yesterday, the Springdale School District has 18 active COVID-19 cases. Since June 15th, 11 faculty and staff members in the district have tested positive. That's an increase of 5 since the ADH's previous report on Thursday. This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, now open with limited entry, timed tickets. The museum looks forward to welcoming patrons with new safety protocols in place. Ticket reservations and online resources, including virtual reality videos, available at crystalbridges.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. Hope your 3-day Labor Day weekend went well and was safe. Thanks for spending part of your Tuesday with us. A court-ordered tax levied against all property owners in 6 northern Arkansas counties to pay back investors and the State Department of Environmental Quality to clean up a failed regional garbage dump will no longer be collected. Pulaski County Circuit Court Judge Tim Fox last month ordered the $18 tax collection to stop. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Investors through Bank of the Ozarks in 2005 bought $12.3 million in bonds issued by Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District to finance the purchase of a sanitation landfill in Baxter County, which soon failed. Fred Wool, current chairman of Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District, and a Boone County Justice of the Peace, says he's always stood against a 2017 court-ordered property tax designed to reimburse state environmental regulators who had to clean up the site, and bondholders who invested in the trash dump.
You know, to be quite honest with you and being straightforward with this, generally speaking, in every other, revenue bonds are not guaranteed by anybody. They're guaranteed by the people that are asking for the revenue bonds. And that's what these were, revenue bonds. That was issued back in 2005.
Multiple lawsuits challenging the novel property tax were filed by Fayetteville attorneys Matt Bishop and Wendy Howerton in 2018 on behalf of a Berryville property owner in Baxter, Carroll, Marion, Newton, Searcy, and Boone County courts. Circuit judges in 5 of the counties ruled the 30-year tax, which began collection in 2017, was an illegal exaction, therefore unconstitutional. Recently upheld by Pulaski County Circuit Court Judge Fox, the paid appointed trash tax receiver, Little Rock bankruptcy attorney Jeffrey Treese, filed a notice of appeal to the Arkansas Supreme Court, but was reportedly ordered by Fox to stop. Bank of the Ozarks, trustee for the bondholders, renamed Bank OZK several years ago, informed Fox on August 13th it would not appeal either. Wool sees Fox's ruling as a victory.
Very much so, something that I have been working for, me and the board, since I have been involved in this. The board never stood behind that $18. It was kind of rammed down their throat by the receiver and some others who were on the board at the time. And then the 2018 election happened, and we got almost a brand new board, and everybody that's on this board are more people-oriented, and they're really working hard to try to resolve this issue.
This novel property tax mechanism was enabled under Arkansas Act 274 of 2014, authored by then-state Senators Johnny Key and Jeremy Hutchinson, according to Bishop's complaint, to reimburse both the Arkansas Departments of Environmental Quality as well as Bank OZK bondholders.
And the only bonds that it has affected was the ones up here in the Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District. None other in the whole state. And Senator Ballinger and Senator Flippo helped, but they passed a law last year that would not happen again.
Bishop Law Firm has argued that ADEQ already has in place a taxpayer-funded landfill post-closure fund to clean up the Baxter County dump. As for the OZK bondholders whose identities have never been revealed?
Well, what's going to happen next is there'll probably be Bank OZK will probably do some kind of legal action to force the board to collect from taxpayers that bond money. And I do not anticipate this board doing anything like that. And to be quite honest with you, what are they going to do? To me, a tax like this needs to be voted on, and the people never had a say in it. The people never voted on it.
Over $3.2 million in property taxes have been collected so far, Wool says, held by the Pulaski County Circuit Court. Wool says the 2019 tax collection will continue but will end for the 2020 collection, but how the property tax will be reimbursed back to property owners has yet to be decided, Wool says. Bishop Law Firm is also seeking reimbursement for years of legal fees. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is our Middleton grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. I've put her outside.
I've been banned.
Yes. We're social distancing, and the way we can do that and still get into the recording computer is I'm inside over an air conditioning vent. I didn't need to tell you that. You're out in the sun.
Actually, it's quite shady, and I'm really sucking up the air conditioning from the window, so don't tell any of the physical plant people.
Right.
Kyle, our old friends at Mental Floss put together a list of companies that go by letters of the alphabet.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, I'm not talking about KFC, which recently dropped its real name, Kentucky Fried Chicken,
right,
because the company thought people were leery of fried foods.
Yeah.
Like, that makes a difference when you walk in there, right?
Yes. Wait, this is fried?
Wait, you mean this bucket I just finished is fried? Okay, Kyle, what company goes by an abbreviation of a name that translates to Bavarian Motor Works?
BMW.
Yes. It stands for something I can't pronounce, Bayerische Motorin Werk, W-E-R-K-E in German. You can always tell German because it really sounds like English, right?
Right.
Which translates to Bavarian Motor Works. What company is named after its founder, whose first and middle names are Leon Leonwood?
Leon Leonwood, so that'd be L.L. Bean.
Yes, that's good. You may know that most municipalities have an ordinance that whenever a Walgreens is built, a CVS has to be built beside it.
It looks like it, right.
No, of course not. But what does CVS stand for?
I know the V is for value.
Mm-hmm. Consumer Value
Store?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. When it was founded in 1963, CVS originally stood for that, Consumer Value Stores. At the time, it sold only health and beauty products. In 1967, it added pharmacy departments. And now they've changed the letters to mean something with surnames and stuff. Kyle, where are you likely to see the letters YKK? This has been a trivia question that's been rolling around lately.
Is that on like a zipper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those letters on seemingly every zipper stand for Yoshida Kogyoi Kabusha Kakashiya.
Okay.
Not anywhere near what it is in Japanese, which translates to Yoshida Manufacturing Corporation. The first word refers to the founder, Tadao Yoshida. All right, so what company do you think were founded by Roy Allen and Frank Wright?
Oh, that's A&W.
Yeah.
I knew that. weirdly.
Which, are they even around anymore? I wonder if they've gone bankrupt.
Well, that's a good question.
Did we ever have an A&W here?
In Fayetteville? I don't know. There was one in where I grew up for a while, but it became a Dog and Suds, I think. Do you remember Dog and Suds?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think I have seen the A&W in one of the, either like a Love's Box,
right.
Love's Place, or...
They're part of a truck stop thing.
Yeah,
now.
Truck stop right. thing, yeah. Uh-huh.
And you can still, I think, get the branded, canned, and bottled root beer at stores.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah. Okay, Kyle, what are the candies that melt in your mouth, not in your hand, called?
M&M's.
Yep. And why are they called that?
I have no idea.
Really? M&M's are named after the company's owners, which a lot of these are,
sure.
right? Production began in 1941 in a factory in New Jersey. The two M's represent the names of Forrest M. Mars.
Oh, Mars, of course.
Senior.
Right.
The founder of the Newark Company, and Bruce Murray, son of Hershey Chocolate's president.
There you go.
What does 3M stand for?
Minnesota Manufacturing and Mining?
Uh-huh. Actually, mining and manufacturing.
Okay, okay.
which became its legal name in 2002, 3M.
Huh.
Because they wanted to, you know.
Sure.
And it is an abbreviation for its former moniker, the Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company. The national company, born in Arkansas, changed its name after a competitor sued.
What kind of company?
That's what I'm asking you. What national company, it's a food company.
Okay.
Changed its name after a competitor sued. It's usually a drive-through thing.
TCBY.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
This can't be yogurt?
That's what it originally was, but I can't believe it's yogurt. Sued them.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. And won.
Mm-hmm.
And so now TCBY stands for the country's best yogurt, which is so lame. It's so sad. Sometimes I hate lawyers. No, never mind.
No, you don't.
Self-hate. Okay.
Right.
The rival frozen yogurt chain, I Can't Believe It's Yogurt, was founded 4 years before TCBY and sued because it thought there would be trouble separating the two.
Well,
I mean, even you said the other one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This company had some hard times. Thought it was once a national player, but now it's down to about 20 stores. It's named after its founder, Sebastian S. Kresge. Often linked with Sears.
Kmart.
Mm-hmm. So the K stood for Kresge. Kyle, do you know what TASER stands for?
I do not.
Tom Swift and His Electric Rifle, a 1911 science fiction novel by Victor Appleton, imagined an electric gun.
Okay.
The device from the book was the inspiration for the real-life taser.
Wow.
Kyle, had I been asked, I would have thought smart car was a generic name, like smart TV.
I just assumed it was.
Isn't smart TV generic?
Yeah, smart TV, smartphone.
Mm-hmm, yeah, smartphone. But that's not how it got its name. Do you know what it stands for?
No, because I was with you. I thought it was a generic term.
Okay, so smart car stands for Swatch Mercedes Art.
Swatch Mercedes Art? I don't even know what that means.
The smart in smart car is short for Swatch Mercedes Art, as it was a collaboration between Swatch.
The watches?
Yeah.
Or
they must,
company, maybe.
Well, yeah, the company that made the watches, but they must have sold a heck of a lot of watches. And Mercedes.
Okay.
The company began in 2008 and ceased operations in 2019, and I didn't know that.
No, I didn't either.
Guess they weren't as smart as they thought they were.
I guess not. That it? Milton Grimarian is Catherine Schultz.
The KUAF Giving Tree is making its appearance early this year. As school starts around the KUAF listening area, many teachers don't have adequate supplies to make school safe for everyone. That's why we're asking you to donate personal protective equipment, hand soap, paper towels, masks, gloves, and more, that KUAF will distribute to local public school teachers. For the past decade, KUAF listeners have donated to the KUAF Giving Tree, getting food, clothes, and other supplies that impacted hundreds in our area. Now we're asking for your help again. Just drop by the Carver Center for Public Radio at 9 South School Avenue in Fayetteville and place your donation in the large container in the front parking lot. We'll then sanitize all donations before delivering them to schools throughout the KUAF listening area. For a full list of items to donate, you can go to KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. This morning's update from the Oklahoma State Department of Health includes one additional virus death in that state, meaning 854 Oklahomans have died from the disease. There have been just more than 65,000 cumulative cases recorded in Oklahoma since the pandemic began. Sunday, Aaron Williams, co-founder of the new racial reconciliation group Bridge the Gap, based in Northwest Arkansas, traveled to Harrison to host a community cookout on the town square. Williams was joined by several dozen supporters, including members of the Black Lives Matter movement. In the days preceding the event, Williams invited Ozarks white nationalists from across Arkansas, especially a local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, to join him for food and conversation. Streaming live on Facebook Sunday afternoon, Williams told several thousand followers he was in Harrison to have conversation and to find common ground with everyone who showed up.
That's all I'm saying, guys. Like, if we can't even have civil conversations, if we can't talk, like, the tension's going to stay high. Let's end this now. That's all I'm saying. Let's end this now.
The only other group to show up Sunday, a dozen Arkansas Patriots, a newly organized paramilitary group standing guard on the town square. They were wearing orange armbands, face coverings, and carrying automatic weapons. Williams walked across the street to shake hands with every member.
How you doing? I'm doing good. It's going good. It's going good.
How's it going?
It's going good. Can I bring y'all some burgers and hot dogs over? Y'all hungry? Can I bring y'all something over to eat? Y'all just had pizza and stuff? All right, just making sure that if y'all want anything, chips, anything, don't hesitate to ask, and I'll get you something brung over here, okay? All right, no problem.
This was the third time this summer that Williams has traveled to Boone County asking to meet with white nationalists who reside there, offering food and conversation in an attempt to ease racial tensions. A film crew from ABC's late-night news magazine Nightline was also in Harrison Sunday and Monday, covering the Bridge the Gap campaign for a segment that is scheduled to air September 21st at 11 p.m. Central Time. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, for the past several months, when Larry Foley was asked about his current documentary film project, one about the history of Fort Smith, he was able to explain everything by just saying the film's title.
I'm working on Indians, Outlaws, Marshals, and the Hanging Judge. And then I don't really even have to tell them what the film is about. They know. That's what it's about. Indians, outlaws, marshals, and the hanging judge. And there is an order in it. In the story, there would not have been a story as it related to Judge Parker and any of the other characters without American Indian removal.
Larry Foley talks about his new documentary and its premiere that's taking place in Fort Smith this week and taking place on Facebook this week. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3. You can later find it online at ozarksatlarge.com. Don't forget, you can subscribe to our free podcast and listen to the show on your schedule. The podcast available, did I mention for free, through all the major podcast distributors. Oh, and later this week on Ozarks, Understanding Conservatism, an honors course at the University of Arkansas next semester. We'll explore what it means to be conservative, the common traits, values, and beliefs conservatives hold. A preview lecture for the spring course will take place virtually next week, and we have a preview conversation this week on our show. Also this week, a new book from M.M. Kent that's about oil painting, love, the American South, and Mexico, and a conversation with Tony Jensen about a new collection of essays by the University of Arkansas English professor. We'll also have the latest daily updates about Arkansas and COVID-19, and probably several stories we don't even know about yet. That's all ahead on this week of Ozarks at Large.
Where is the oldest crater on Earth? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, and this is Scratching the Surface. An exciting new discovery has just been made regarding the oldest impact structure here on Earth. And it's in Western Australia, between the towns of Sandstone and Micathara. Meet Yarrabooba Crater, a 2.23-billion-year-old crater, and it's actually an eroded remnant of a much larger crater. While the rim of the crater is not totally visible using satellite images, there are other clues about this hidden gem of an impact site, mainly using mineral data. The extent of the impact came from studying the quartz, schacht quartz to be precise. Schacht quartz is the best evidence for a major impact event, mainly that schacht quartz must form from a short, intense burst of high temperature and pressure, like that from an asteroid impact. Zircon and monazite are other minerals that can be associated with the age of the crater, along with uranium-lead dating. This gave us the magic number of 2.23 billion years old. This date places the impact at the end of the first and longest ice age on Earth, known as the Huronian Glaciation. Finding this kind of impact structure shows us a couple of things, namely how dynamic our Earth's surface actually is to nearly erode away this fantastic impact site, but also the minerals found can also tell us the story in full. Who knows what other impact sites we have yet to find on our planet?
Caitlin Ahrens is the KUAF Pluto Manager and a postdoctoral fellow at NASA. You can hear archived segments of Scratching the Surface at KUAF.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Berryville. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to tonight's show included Zuzana Sitek, Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, Jacqueline also providing the reporting and sound from this weekend's events in Harrison, and Timothy Dennis produced our show at his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Scratching the Surface is written and hosted by Caitlin Ahrens. It's produced by Pete Hartman inside the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. And our Middleton Grammarian is Catherine Sherald. She joins us most Tuesdays on Ozarks at Large. Don't forget, you can support your public radio station and support programming like Ozarks at Large by making a contribution in the amount of your choice at supportkuaf.com. All contributions made in September go toward our September goal of $140,000, the amount we know we need to keep bringing you all the programs that you rely on. Supportkuaf.com, and thank you. We will be back with you tomorrow at noon for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large, and the governor is scheduled to hold another press briefing. That's tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. 91.3 KUAF will bring you live coverage of that. Peter Van de Graaff, great classical music, coming up next on KUAF. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. We will be back with you tomorrow at noon. Take care of yourself.